This is Dave Berkus, and you are noodling down the NeuroNoodle Highway.
Welcome to NeuroNoodle's Neurofeedback and Neuropsychology Podcast, featuring tech legend Jay Gunkelman. He is the man who has read over 500,000 brain scans. Our goal is to provide information and promote options for better mental health. The NeuroNoodle podcast is supported by listeners and viewers just like you. And a special thanks to our gold and silver supporters. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neurosciences NeuroGuide Workshop December 10th and 11th in Madeira Beach, Florida. It's led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend: online or in person with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. And if you sign up now, you can join Dr. Robert Thatcher at his house for a pre-course get-together December 9th. It's going to be a blast. What a better way to enjoy winter by being in Madeira Beach, Florida, and earning up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. MindMedia.com. Get the latest EEG and neurofeedback technology from MindMedia.com. Their semi-dry sensor cap is a wonder to see, and their EEG amplifiers have been trusted in the field for decades. Their neurofeedback and QEEG courses will get you up to speed in no time. Visit MindMedia.com now. Hi, all. Welcome back to part two.
And boy, there's an awful lot there that I would love to have available at the CVS mini clinic. I'd like to have it available even in some of these colleges and universities where 50% of the students say they have some form of depression or mental problem. And 25% of them are making appointments, as many as they can make, at the facilities in those universities and colleges, just because they feel they can't operate normally.
Yeah.
And there are no tools. The psychiatrists who are there, the psychologists that they bring in, and even just the clinicians don't have the tools to do anything more than listen and estimate and soothe. And that ain't what's happening here.
Yeah, and our DSM-oriented diagnostic approach is not valid, and we know it and admit it, but we haven't replaced it. There's no new nosology as to how to figure out what's wrong and how to treat it. We can categorize reliably. I mean, it's like a good dictionary. You get the same definition again and again and again. But this is not the Bible. It doesn't. There's no prediction of what's going to effectively treat you, and the biomarkers and neuromarkers and genomes have really not panned out as well as one might have hoped. But neuromarkers and biomarkers appear to be predictive, and I've spent a lot of years looking at medication prediction, and in psychiatry, using the EEG, QEG, and it seems to have worked out nicely. One of my clients actually had a few thousand subjects that we had done reports on, and he de-identified them. And went through an IRB to get access to researchers. We basically ended up having a client of mine who had a few thousand subjects that we had worked together, and he went to an IRB and got approval to release de-identified data from all of those clients, their entire, not just the EEG, QEG, but also what meds they were on, what diagnoses they had, everything from their chart, except something that would be identifiable. And my client calls me up one day. He's all excited. He said, "The IRB approved it. We can access the data." I said, "Congratulations, Ron." He says, "Now what do we do?" So all that work, I said, you know, your psychiatrist is at the bottom of a funnel of other psychiatrists who have tried to treat their clients and failed to find a medication that would work. And they sent them to you with all of your additional testing and everything to come up with an answer as to what would work. I want you to take the people that were referred for gross medication guessing failure and look at their EEGs. Their EEGs are going to have within them EEG features that predict medication failure in psychiatry. Ah, great idea. Well, what kind of software do we want to use? why don't you use a cluster analysis? Find a cluster, add another cluster, add another cluster, add another cluster. When a cluster makes no freaking sense at all, back up one. And that's the total number of clusters you can get. So he basically added clusters. They found four very meaningful clusters. The number one predictor in psychiatry of medication failure is the presence of an epileptiform burst in the EEG that's unexpected. It's not a seizure client. They're not having convulsions. There's no absence spells. There's no motor, contractions. There's nothing that would tell you that the person is having a discharge unless you're looking at the EEG. What kind of patient is that? Well, 60% of the autism population, 25% of the ADD population, a third of the psychotic patients, between 12 and 30% of the anxiety patients, depending upon whether the anxiety or mood makes sense rationally or not. Epileptiform content is easy to see. If you look, if you don't look, you'll never see it. So maybe we should be looking. Number two predictor, beta spindles, gigantic sinusoidal beta spindles, bigger than 20 microvolts. What was called F2 beta spindles by Gibbs and Gibbs, who originally saw beta spindles in epilepsy in the 1930s, early 30s. Now, obviously, beta spindles are seen in non-epileptics as well, but beta spindles also predict medication failure. Focal findings. You assume this is a psychiatric problem, and you've got a focal problem. There's a tumor or a stroke or a trauma or a gliosis, some local problem, arteriovenous malformation, something focal that's causing a brain problem that you assume is a psychiatric disturbance, and your med isn't going to fix a focal problem like that. And the last one is a diffuse encephalopathy where the EEG is a low voltage, slow EEG, and it's toxic or metabolic. Mold in the house, autoimmune problem. You live too close to goodness knows what chemical plant. But those four predictors basically end up identifying almost all of your medication. I can't figure out what the heck this patient needs to be on. As soon as you actually look, oh, this ADD kid has epileptiform content in their EEG. So the same client of mine who did this, cluster analysis work also looked at, okay, you've got a whole bunch of reports. We made recommendations to you that you take a psych patient that has no seizures and give them an anticonvulsant. An empirical trial and an anticonvulsant. We made that recommendation based on the EEG, not that they're having seizures, but this is a psych patient that has to have this because of their EEG. What happened? How did that come out? I mean, open the file drawer up, pull out all the ones we made that recommendation for, and tell me, did I screw up bad? Did I get... We basically end up having... the ability to look back in time and see what the success rate was for predicting an empirical trial and an anticonvulsant for a psych patient. It turns out that we have an 85% positive clinical impact. Now, what the hell study do you find with an 85% positive clinical impact in it? You know, where is this magical study? You know, this is an outcome that's extraordinary. And it's extraordinary because it's not ordinary. And you don't ordinarily look at psych patients' brains for epileptiform content. You look for that with people who are having seizures. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you actually look and see, then you've got a totally different treatment approach. Instead of the DSM, you've got neuromarkers and biomarkers and phenotypes. And, you know, the Korean group has also listened to me, perhaps at their own peril, talking about endophenotypes as a predictor of clusters of people that respond to the same treatment. If you have the same endophenotype, it doesn't matter what your DSM is, you get the same treatment. That your phenotype determines your treatment, not your DSM symptom story that you might tell differently tomorrow. So, when I published that in 2005, I was petrified. You know, I've looked in my rearview mirror for the last few decades, and I see a pattern in the data. Well, if you're seeing patterns in your data, you're either totally crazy or you're seeing a meaningful pattern in your data. And you don't know which is which until you actually publish the result and let people kick the tires and test the assumptions that are predicted by the publication. So I bit my tongue almost clean through and put the paper out there. 2 out of 11 patterns had known genetics. The rest we hypothesized had genetic correlates. They've been found. We predicted these patterns will respond to these therapies for meds and for neurofeedback. And again, it's a retrospective paper. You can't drive your car looking out the rearview mirror. Well, you can, but I wouldn't recommend it. You know, it's a fruitless way to do anything other than cause an accident. You know,
Jay, you've been looking at brain scans about as long as Dave has been investing. Okay, Dave, you know money. Jay, you know brains. Okay, and me, I've been in this 4, maybe 5 years. I'm better at podcasting than I'm at neurofeedback. But here's kind of what I see is going out just from a sales standpoint. There's two reasons why people don't buy. They don't understand the offer or they're not sufficiently disturbed. Okay. When do you go to the doctor? When you have whatever the problem is. Okay. Last resort. Okay. There's a stigma with mental health. Okay. You break your arm, you get a cast on it, okay? You bang your head, you say something's wrong with your head, and then you don't want to do that. There's two businesses that I see here. One is the diagnosing business or taking the picture and making a prediction of what's going on. And then number two, once that prediction is made or the diagnosis is made, what do you do to train away the symptoms, okay? To me, it seems a very easy, if they don't understand the offer, it's very easy to take an EEG and show a picture of the brain. To train it, you're training it against this database, and God bless capitalism, whoever owns the database is going to fight to say that their baby's not ugly, okay? So you're going to have fear, uncertainty, and doubt out there, okay? So you have to fight that. Then you have to fight the drug companies that, why would I want an end game in mental health unless I'm selling these machines? So you have to deal with that part of it. When I was in Suson City and I met 70 of the greatest neurofeedback minds in the world, and me, I'm sitting at the bar having beers because I'm only picking up half of what's going on. But I just said, hey, guys, what if, and let's just say that's the Neuro Noodle Network pledge, okay? Anybody that comes in, I have free time where I got to employ contractors or employees to do scans. What if I just did an EEG at cost just so somebody has it? I'm not going to tell you what it's going to say. I'll give you the 30-page report. I'm just going to give it to you. And so you have a baseline in case something happens in the future. You can get another one done and have it compared, right? if everybody across the network does that, let's just say you have the iMedicine caps, we want to increase the ends, because once whatever that number needs to be of input right. into the database, it's a network effect. The next scan that goes in, it becomes even more valuable. Why can't we have all the people that we know are valid, you know, the BCIA accredited, whatever the stamp of approval, do it at cost. Take your free time of your techs and just have them do these scans. Give it to them just so we have it out there. Is there a downside to doing that, guys?
Yeah, the FDA is going to require clinical trials. They're going to have specialists who do the clinical trials. They charge about $100 per person in these trials. So these are expensive. Yeah. And again, when we're talking about an FDA approval, not just of getting to the AI diagnostics of the biomarker, but soon getting to the care, the PBM care algorithm, you really are telling the FDA that you believe and can prove that these diagnoses are real. Yeah. And getting on with what Jay has said a minute ago, the real thing is the halfway in between, the MCI patients that really don't know whether or not this is aging and normal, or whether or not they're off the spectrum. And I think that's one of the reasons why you want to bring this down to the level of a Minute Clinic. People are going to be worried, and some of these people are going to be, satisfied after they see a diagnosis that helps them to understand that what they have is normal aging on the spectrum, or it's time to go see a doctor. And I would love to have that for $100 or $200, or rent one of the helmets for $80 and use it for 2 days at home. Any of those variants to be able to have that kind of help. And this takes what Jay has been talking about down to the level of the average individual. Yeah. And that someday is where it should be, but the FDA isn't going to get us there fast.
Well, the old days weren't the good old days.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I used needle electrodes, and we had tube amplifiers that weren't stable until you had them warm up for over an hour.
Ouch.
And they were nightmares to maintain calibration. And nowadays, everything is solid state and stable and small. I mean, our amp was the size of a desk, and required 1,500 watts of power to power up the tubes. You could heat a room with the darn things. So, you know, and it's gone from something the size of a desk that was hot as hell to a cold device that you set on your head. And the hookup is relatively quick and easy. I don't stick 21 needles in your head.
Yes.
I mean, we had a bottle of a cocktail that we'd give to every kid who walked in the door for a test, and we'd knock them out, because there's no way you're going to get a kid to cooperate with 21 needles stuck in their head with a glowing device next to them. No, it wasn't quite like the old Frankenstein movies, but it was close, you know. We didn't have sparks shooting off of things, but glowing tubes gigantic old
by
machines,
attending,
you know,
Applied Neurosciences NeuroGuide Workshop December 10th and 11th in Madeira Beach, Florida. It's led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend: online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. And if you sign up now, you can join Dr. Robert Thatcher at his house for a pre-course get-together December 9th. It's going to be a blast. What a better way to enjoy winter by being in Madeira Beach, Florida, and earning up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. We're running towards the end of the show, guys, and you brought up the kids, Jay. It boggles my mind, pardon the pun, where a high school say you got to do a physical before you can go play football. Why aren't you getting your brain checked or get a baseline at the same time? That's kind of my point. And the barrier is insurance not paying for it. So if you do something that makes it affordable for the masses as you're building up your database, look, the FDA, look, this stuff isn't regulated. If you regulated it, I think you would separate the snake oil from the real stuff, you know, but it's not. So if you can have just the baseline and then you pick your neurologist or whatever is approved FDA, you know, and then you give it to them and then you do another one and compare it to, if you remove the barrier to entry, because it's $1,000, $1,500, some people are charging, you know, for that. And if this is something that isn't like done once a year, it might be done multiple times.
And, you know, and you're talking about a report, not a full analysis.
Just
get the damn recording. And if something happens to little Johnny or little Susie, you know, bonk your head or you got an infection and now you're a little off. I mean, whatever happens, you've got a baseline and now you can make a comparison. Now you analyze the baseline and the update and you've got your difference. So, you know, it's not that expensive to do a test. The analysis of the test is where the expense comes in. And with the Korean approach, actually the analysis is kind of no more difficult than the recording. I mean, it's all automated through a cloud. And I have to say that the recording itself, the iSync Wave is approved. That's a device that the FDA says, that's a nice little amplifier you've got there. There's nothing wrong with doing an EEG. There's absolutely nothing wrong with doing an EEG. So you could right now with iSync Wave at a high school or a junior high or a college team or for a sports team, end up using this as a baseline test and follow-up test and the EEG itself. Now, the discriminant diagnostic end of it is always what puts the FDA off. And the first QEG machine I ever had was a Spectrum 32, which the FDA went through and busted the Cadwell for putting in diagnostic software on top of the EEG QEG device itself. And, you know, it was $1 million fine. They could have had it reduced to $100,000, but they had already sold as many as they thought they would ever sell. And why go through the FDA 510K process to sell more when you think you've sold as many as you're going to sell? So they basically paid their fine. They had an FDA inspector move into their office to make sure they didn't talk to any of their customers, support the device, anything like that. There was a Y2K problem with the device. I mean, there was a two-digit date of birth for the year. You know, you had to calculate the age. I mean, Y2K came along. There were fixes, but you couldn't talk to your customer about a fix. So all of these devices became expensive boat anchors, you know, $160,000 down to worthless.
I think we're now at the point of seeing that we've divided this into two. Number one is the diagnostic, and that we can't do yet. Number two is the regular QEEG and its advantages. And so for a few seconds, I'd just like to talk about the differences.
What are the differences between the diagnostic side of things and the QEEG part of things? Or are they the same? Talk to me like I'm a 10-year-old.
I could have Jay do that. But let me stop for a second and just kind of remind you of the marketing and sales side of this. And that is, if we can, first of all, get the approvals, of course, and ask the question of both the end user and of the clinic, the hospitals, Kaiser, that is both the insurer and the hospital, ask them the question about why buy it? Why buy mine? Why buy now? we've been talking here in this session today about the now, that there are a lot of urgencies, including the baseline and getting all the way through the analysis at the moment of an impact, for instance, on the field. Why buy mine? Well, you know, the argument here is it's a single unit condensed into a wireless opportunity that doesn't require lead setting, can be done in 10 minutes. And the analysis someday after the FDA approval will be able to guide somebody who really isn't an expert in this into the right path. So why buy now? Obviously, because there are CTI injuries and there are other people who are very much in need in the MCI spectrum who don't know it and wouldn't know it if they didn't have the opportunity to get this mass opportunity.
Go ahead, Jim. I also see a marketplace in the schools. The schools have a lot of kids that have learning issues, and the learning issues are from a wide variety of sources. They may be one of the 60% of the autism population that have epileptiform discharges. They may be 25% of the ADD that have epileptiform discharges. Right. Until you actually look, you won't know. And everybody who's got any kind of a difficulty with performance, whether it's in academics or any other kind of performance, if you're not performing optimally, it's time to have your systems checked out. And they can be tuned and optimized. So there's no sense being, you know, anything less than fully successful when you can actually look, find the issue, remediate the issue. I've worked in the field for 50 years. I work with people that have problems that are considered irretrievably broken brains. And we take people from intractable epilepsy they've had for years and years and years, and within a reasonably short period of time, a year or so, end up having them off of medication, seizure-free, medication-free, and performing optimally. We have a Division I tennis player who is an intractable epileptic. And, you know, she's now a tennis star. We've got a whole series of cases that were basically life failures. A Drevets seizure case. And Drevets, she was 8 years old, couldn't tie her shoes, couldn't speak. And in a series of a few months worth of training, actually amazingly fast, only 42 training sessions. We usually quote over 100 for intractable epilepsy. But 42 training sessions later, her EEG is clean as a bell. And I asked, well, what's going on with the little girl? I mean, EEG being clean is great, but what's the little girl doing? Oh, she's riding a bicycle and she's speaking fluently. She had Drevets. And it was an accurate diagnosis of Drevets. I mean, she had a normal developmental trajectory to a year and a half, 2 years. She started to have changes and then seizures, and the seizures became intractable. She lost speech, became basically a vegetable. She couldn't do any simple self-care. Yeah, you can't dress yourself. It's pretty hard to be functional.
Wow. So Jay, here's a question that may take us off on a tangent. We don't have much time. But what do you think of LED therapies and ultrasound therapies?
Well, treatments, I think, are appropriate for those who don't have the ability to intervene themselves in the therapy. Treatments can be done to you. Training, you end up with a skill set at the end. A treatment, you end up with an effect that might require further training or treatment. So I have nothing against photobiomodulation or DC stim or AC stim or pulse DMF or any of those. There are different ways to manipulate brain function. But again, there's treatments have an effect. Training has a learning curve with an outcome that's a skill set that you end up with. So there's treatment, you go to the chiropractor, you feel great. But, 3 weeks later, the old back is a little funky again. I got to go back in for another treatment. But if it's a training and you've got a skill set, you've got a lifelong skill set. The observations and neurofeedback is from intake to outtake. Everybody tests people when they're done with their training. But if you do a follow-up a year later, they're even better than they were when you're done with them. I learned how to ride a bike. My dad had to hold the seat, and run behind me. Now, eventually he could let go and I could ride the bike. Well, that's the end of therapy, but, I was still pretty rickety. I was upright. I didn't fall over, but, a month or two later, a year or two later, I'm riding with no hands. I put cards in the spokes, make it sound like a motorcycle. Pulling wheelies. There's a whole level of skill that was developed with the skill set that I learned. And if you have a simple treatment, you've got an effect, but you don't have a skill, and it's not a skill that you can develop further. And in neurofeedback and biofeedback techniques, you learn a skill. And you can get better at it even after you're done with the equipment. The equipment is a way to get you started. It's not the end point.
That's a great example. And the bicycle example, I think, is the best. Nice.
Dave Berkus, what is it going to take to get mental health itself in the mainstream in the same conversation as physical health, right? If you're out of shape, you get yourself a personal trainer and you work out till you get in shape. Okay. You need a mental trainer. You got to work out your brain. Nobody's thinking that way. What do you think has to happen, or how long it'll be? Will it be in our lifetimes? Just want to know your opinion.
Back to the marketing example again. We sell by fear or greed. And greed doesn't play into account here, but fear does. And it really depends upon whether or not, as we market this, we market it based upon, I hate to say the word fear, but on fear. Do people meet their potential because they have problems that are preventing them from doing it? Or as they get older, are they on the spectrum or are they well below it? All these questions, if you pose them to them and let them know that they are questions, make people think that they need to know if they are, quote, normal, or if they can train themselves to be better than they were. So I'm thinking that mental health is both predictive, prophylactic, and also it is the repair shop, the automobile repair shop. It's either one of the two, and one leads to the other. We have not been doing a good job on the predictive side, no matter what. And it is because we haven't gotten the message out that there is a spectrum that the people could be on and might be able to help themselves on. Jay gave one example of the epileptic. So that's my answer. And certainly the FDA is going to be the brakes on the bicycle. I'm using Jay's term right now, to the point where, and maybe perfectly adequately, is going to stop us at the diagnostic. And that's really where we need to go, but can't quite yet. So we're putting a lot of money into trying to overcome this. The term is de novo. The 510K that we've talked about are easy because there are predicate devices. De novo is the term you use when it's something that is new to the FDA, and they're not willing to give you that approval until you have proven without a doubt that whatever you're trying to do is right. That's where we are right now. We are negotiating with Cambridge University in Oxford to do the same thing in Britain, because it seems to be easier there than it is here. We are starting the 510. We are starting the trials here in this country. We plan to start the trials in Australia as well. This is going to take years, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We'll just have to know that, and a lot of money. In the meantime, we want to sell a lot of helmets and a lot of software that helps the clinician to do the diagnostic or helps the psychologist or psychiatrist to do the diagnostic with better information than they've had in the past, obtained quicker than they would have gotten in the past.
Yeah. And the FDA has a thing about the locus of control. The diagnostic impression is in the doctor's possession.
Yes.
And that they don't want it to be anywhere other than the doctor's choice. If it's a machine making a determination, you're a this or you're a that, a discriminant, are you A or a B, they have difficulty with that. But then discriminants, I have a little difficulty with myself, because are you an A or a B? Well, what if you're a C? It'll give you an A or a B answer, even if you're a C. So
yes.
Discriminants are a multivariate that I think, rather than have the diagnostic impression made by the computer, let the computer give you a percent fit, and then let the doctor make the determination. Oh, I've got these 15 categories, and I've got percent fit for all of them. So I got a 6% here. I got an 80% fit for alcoholism. Maybe I should ask my client a little bit about that. This may be a category that I need to inquire about. So if you can get past the FDA without the computer making the decision, but giving all the information, the decision is still in the doctor's lap to make the decision. It's not as satisfactory as actually having a valid decision being made, because there's still going to be doctors who will make mistakes. I mean, humans are human, but then so are algorithms.
So that means we stop before the comparison of a normative database, and that hurts. I'd love to be able to have at least that for the doctor to see.
The normative database comparison is just data. There's no diagnosis on that. That's just a printout of factoids, and it's like a percent fit of categories. If it was just dumping the normative output, they're not going to freak out about that. Normative outputs are full of outliers that are artifacts and things like that too. So, it'd be kind of like what's out there now. You can get an EEG device in a database that's already FDA registered, and you can use that and get a printout. NeuroGuide is a non-diagnostic printout of quantitative information. It still requires somebody to figure it out. And you can get 600 pages of printout. And I have to say, remember the food pyramid? We have a lot of data, a little bit of knowledge, and almost no wisdom. So if you get 600 pages, which two pages in there are the ones you need to really look at? Right. So you can obfuscate with the amount of data that we produce. And unfortunately, that's the case now. We generate so much data that it's confusing. And unless you've got a lot of experience, it's hard to kind of page through the data to pull out the one or two pages that are actually meaningful for the client.
Actually, that's encouraging to me. I didn't even know we could actually use the normative database until FDA approval. So there's one that we have good attorneys and good advisors that are helping us to work down that highway, narrow noodle highway, of where we can go before we have to stop. And
your database is going to be a substantial equivalency. Some of the particular metrics that are in it are slightly different metrics, but that's still just descriptive metrics. They're not unique outliers. They're part of EEG lab and MATLAB that are used in all the universities throughout the United States and the world. So That should be a piece of cake to get through the FDA.
I hate pointing finger without offering a solution. And Dave, you're doing your deal with your smart bets and keeping an eye on things. Jay, you're cranking out the scans. And I'm just going to try to keep doing this podcast and link all the fragmented practitioners together. Maybe have an open source database that whatever product that you're using, you can put it in there to get the ends up, you know, if we do these things at cost. I don't know. That's what I'm going to try to do, guys. We don't have a lot of time left on this earth. So I'm just, what can I do right now that'll have the greatest impact? And I think that's what we'll do with this podcast. And it's growing because we have awesome guests like Dave Berkus and the man who has read over 500,000 brain scans, Jay Gunkelman. Thank you both for being on the show today.
Well, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for the invite back.
please. Thanks for sticking around. The NeuroNoodle podcast is supported by listeners and viewers just like you. A special thanks to our gold and silver supporters. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neurosciences NeuroGuide Workshop December 10th and 11th in Madeira Beach, Florida. It's led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. And if you sign up now, you can join Dr. Robert Thatcher at his house for a pre-course get-together December 9th. It's going to be a blast. What a better way to enjoy winter by being in Madeira Beach, Florida, and earning up to 16 CEU hours. Sign up now at appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. MindMedia.com. Get the latest EEG and neurofeedback technology from MindMedia.com. Their semi-dry sensor cap is a wonder to see, and their EEG amplifiers have been trusted in the field for decades. Their neurofeedback and QEEG courses will get you up to speed in no time. Visit MindMedia.com now.